Teresa Rayford, welcome to KABU again.
Well, good morning, Bill. Thank you.
Teresa Rayford is a great activist in Portland with Don't Shoot Oregon. Is it Don't Shoot Oregon or Don't Shoot Portland?
Don't Shoot Portland, but
don't
you're giving me ideas.
Don't Shoot Portland, but it's for all of Oregon and, in fact, the country. They're active in, quote, criminal justice reform. It's a rotten system, and all of it has to be really radically changed. Don't Shoot Portland and many affiliated groups have, and Don't Shoot United States and Black Lives Matter and many affiliated groups have created a movement for Black Lives. It issued a wonderful statement of the kinds of demands that are necessary to not just enable Blacks to and people of color to come out from the what is really an oppressive state for most people, but also white people. It's a change in the economic and social system that they're demanding. I think it's going to get a lot of traction in the next couple of years. We'll be talking about that. That is the larger demands for jobs and housing and many other changes, protection of poor, vulnerable workers. It's quite a substantial and wonderful document that people might look for. First, Teresa, let's talk about what happened last week. There are two shootings of unarmed Black men, other shootings as well. The ones in Charlotte and Tulsa have gotten the most media play. On very short notice, that is a couple days, Don't Shoot Portland scheduled a march. Tell us so why it's so important to keep marching.
Well, basically, Bill, when we do our protest, it's a call to action. It's in solidarity with the families and the community members that are fighting the police brutality and the circumstances in which they're thrown into because of the state war against Black people. And so when we did the protest, and I know that you're like, oh, it's very short notice. Well, we wanted to wait until there was a need for a demand. And the need for the demand came when the community there in Charlotte was basically asking for the videos. They were asking to have the video released to the public, and we knew that the video was going to be released of Keith Scott being murdered to his family, but they were also saying that the community needed to see it. And not only were we protesting in solidarity to uplift his name and bring the humanity to the person that was murdered by police, but also to show solidarity and to demand that those videos be released and to also bring awareness back into our own city about the police violence and the white supremacy and the systems that bind us. And especially at a time like now, where we have a collective bargaining agreement on the table dealing directly with police brutality. And so timing is everything.
You have to keep the pressure on or the killing, it just becomes another daily fact, as it was like 20 years ago when there was even more police killing.
Yeah.
But there weren't video cameras that began showing it, everybody with a camera. A lot of the evidence was only the police testimony. Now, when that video has begun to be shown, I think that was an important part of it.
Like the Rodney King
beating. For most, even white liberals, they had no idea of how horrible in these imprisoned areas, white and Black, where police had complete impunity.
Yep.
Basically, poorly paid people everywhere, with a huge predominance, of course, of Black people who were segregated into their own little prison gulags.
Well, as you notice with the protests, we promote the filming of police. At the protests on Friday, we had to continuously say, film the police, because we didn't understand why riot cops and SWAT gear and with guns and all types of military equipment were showing up to a protest where they knew it was going to be predominantly families and children and people with disabilities. I mean, again, our police state and whatever system of control is basically using the physical force of police officers to create a fear for community members, but at the same time saying it's important for us to engage with them. It's chaotic to me.
Yeah, I saw a lot of video of the Charlotte marches on establishment media, and their primary story was, oh, this march is without violence. And then, of course, there's these robocops showing up all over.
With the violence.
And with the violence. But even if there's no violence at all, even if not one garbage can is put on fire, and you can be sure when a garbage can gets on fire, it gets on the news. well, there was violence at this one. That's their whole rhetoric, is it violent or not? Which, of course, is a statement, is these black people are violent people.
And it's sickening because they're saying that when we hurt an object or when someone injures an object, that's more violent than the death of our children. And they know that's what we're out there fighting for. Mayor Hills brought that up the other day in City Hall. And I thought it was a disgusting time to bring in that type of rhetoric. We had children, we had families, we had people that had never been to City Hall before, that walked several hours from Northeast Portland to bring their grievance to their mayor. And we got there, and he tried to chastise those community members and whoever followed us in there as allies and accomplices and whatever we needed to make it happen. He chastised them about graffiti, and he knew that they were in there because of the blood of dead children. He knew that we were in there speaking the name of Keith Scott and Terrence Crothers. He knew that. You know, he knew that we've been talking about Keaton Otis and Kendra James and Aaron Campbell and all of the people that were killed here in our own community. But he decided to bring up vandalism. And that's one of the things that we have to break. The state is being appropriate in their response to black people because they're protecting things and property. And it's violent for us to be in those spaces. They don't want us in those spaces. You know, it's sickening, but we have to change those things. Those are all policy things.
That's part of it. We talked earlier again about the current climate and the way that black bodies now inspire fear, and it's happening, and the fear is being promoted in the most obvious ways by people like Trump. But the fear is promoted everywhere, so we can have Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, as being the most beloved athletes of the century. White kids, white men, white racists.
Love them.
Love them.
Their games, their toys, their objects. They're not people to them, because as soon as they get on their knee or they demand that they don't stand for the anthem, then of course they want to lynch them. Trump is American as apple pie. He is what America is. He's not brand new. He's not teaching us anything that we didn't already know. He's exposing it, and people are attaching themselves to it because they want to be that. I mean, we've used propaganda in our country to make it seem like we can associate ourselves with humanity, but that's a damn lie, and you know it. Yeah. All of us know it. When the United Nations is suggesting that we stop killing our unarmed citizens, when you have countries that don't even have a percentage of the murders that we have, from our law enforcement to citizens to people that live here, we're talking about children. And we're not just talking about black people. We have a problem. 708 people have been killed by law enforcement as of today. Unless, well, I think there was one killed in Houston today.
Yeah, we're talking about killing now, but I think we have to broaden it. Obviously, the prison system.
The prison system, our community policing,
the way the
social
courts
services.
Work, the way the prosecuting attorneys work, the sentencing system, more and more police in schools.
Yes.
The country is moving towards this utter police state, particularly for black people. And the amount of number of people in prison, black people in prison, not just people given the death penalty, but people serving life without parole, 10 times the number of those people.
Look at how many people are in jail for nonviolent offenses,
and
they're looking at 15 to 25 years.
It's horrible to really see it, although let me challenge one thing. That's one face of the country. There's another face of the country. There are a lot of white people and brown people and mixed people who are appalled and frightened, but in fact don't know the depth of it and are insufficiently active and not part of movements. And then there's a lot of people who are part of movements that are ineffective. It seems to me that there is the possibility of ultimately rallying against not just the police state, but the vigilante state.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, though, the vigilante state
yes.
that's being set up.
Well, let's get on that, because in honor of Larnell Bruce, who was killed here in Oregon by a white supremacist last month, and, you know, they just re-indicted him after our protest on September 11th on hate crime charges. Most of the work that we've been doing in solidarity with the prison strike has been to look out for the safety of those that are incarcerated, and also to hold law enforcement accountable for taking these complaints of racial injustice prejudice or bias or assaults or harassment or intimidation seriously, because they haven't been tracking them. They haven't used them to lead to safer communities. They haven't used them to expose the white supremacy and the retaliation that could be enforced using informants or non-people of color to, you know, assassinate or to cause problems and havoc in our communities. There's been no force of action against those type of gangs, but there's this entire country that is serving to force of action against Black community members that live in poverty, and we identify them as gangs. We're leaving a whole wide circuit wide open. In the same community where Larnell Bruce was killed, they had white supremacist KKKs distributing information to community members, recruiting them. And we know that that's a known hate organization, but the police in our state were saying that that's something that should be ignored. When they rally at the Capitol, or when they burned Kate Brown's, a fake image of her at the Capitol the other day, they're not sending out riot cops to those type of people. And so they know that we're vulnerable. The Black community is very vulnerable to vigilantism of all sorts, because what media has said is that if a Black body is murdered, then it's obvious that another Black person has pulled that trigger or put the lynch around that neck. And that's not the truth. We know that there's people that are accommodating themselves to violence because of the work that's being done.
Yeah, we're talking to Teresa Rayford, who is spent how many years now, Teresa?
6 years today.
6 years today, trying to expose the dirty underbelly, the way in which America is becoming more and more hostile and murderous towards Black people and other people who they consider Black and worthless, regardless of their color. Teresa, let's get back to, though, the vigilante problem and the rise of a white supremacy movement, a particularly virile anti-Black movement. There was an incident in Northeast Portland recently where three young children were sprayed with bear spray by some white guy who then drove away. Tell us, they were the kids of a doctor at OHSU.
They don't want to be, they're pretty anonymous as a family, but it's not a doctor's family. She is a person that actually is employed there. And her children were, in their community saying goodbye to their family member, their grandmother. And this is all in the news already. But he rode up on a bike, got off of his bike, was yelling racial slurs at the children, and then commenced to grabbing a bear spray can and spraying inside of the car where the children were buckled into their seatbelts. And when the family called to the police, and again, this is in the media as well, when the family called, the response was mostly like, what kind of kids are they and what do they do in the community? And there wasn't more of an urgence in getting a description of this person or collecting the tools that fell off of his bike so that they could, look for possible fingerprints or do any type of investigation. It was more about, what were the kids doing wrong? And that's a norm.
Why was this guy justified in bear spraying? They were they were beginning the way they ask about killing investigations. Well, what distinguished this person?
These are children, Who would ask that question?
It's bizarre. It's
well,
bizarre.
It's not bizarre to me, because I've been out here advocating for families for years. And like I told you, when Shaquita Lewis was talking about her daughter, Yashani Vaughn, being missing and saying, look, she's not coming home, they didn't even want to look for the little girl. They kept on saying, she's a runaway, she's a thug, this is ghetto. They didn't even want to respond until the family was saying, we're going to protest the police station. They don't take Black crime, when we're complaining about something, when we're calling the police, they keep saying they want to come in our community, they want to hang out in our schools, they want to be more engaged with us. When we call them and there's a problem, they do not take it as a problem. They take it as an opportunity to investigate the family. They take it as an opportunity to share information with other agencies, to dismantle that family, and to criminalize that family. And that is something that is so out of order. It is so out of order, and we don't have leaders fighting against that. But it, again, leaves us vulnerable.
Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole, talking to Teresa Rayford. Teresa, first, you're going to be talking to Charlie Hales. One of the good things about the march this Friday was you forced him to, in fact, discuss what the city is doing. If this is going to stop, and if we're going to change, we're going to do, quote, reform, real reform, there's going to have to be a really large movement of people of color and lots of whites.
Yeah.
And it seems to me we really have to build that movement. You talked earlier about, I sort of challenged you, that racism and violence are like apple pie,
mm-hmm.
part of America. But it seems to me there's another America, it seems to me, that is going to have to be organized and stand up, who I believe stand for very different principles and life ways, including environmental justice. There's huge there's really large numbers of people out there who recognize how rotten it really is.
They have to continue recognizing that in intersectionality, when we talk about recognizing things, we cannot acquiesce. We can never acquiesce. When we're dealing with epidemics in this country, if it was a physical disease, we would all be researching it. We would be looking for ways to beat it. We would be trying to knock it out. We need to do the same thing with racism and state-sanctioned discrimination from where we stand. When we're talking about the Vote Black platform and how it recognizes the movement for Black lives, what we're asking for is elected politicians and those running for office to connect with us so that we can discuss these issues. We have to have a voice. They have to come to our table.
Yeah, it also, though, talks about the absolute need for jobs programs for all of these young whites and blacks who are left without hope, who are not going to, in fact, be able to compete with those with money and support and schools that are well-funded. They're stuck at the bottom, and some of them go bad. One of the great things about that agenda, at least for me, is it talks also about housing. It talks about
about policy and how to dismantle.
It talks about the drug wars, the prison pipeline, the need to develop affordable housing, to support cooperatives even, and Black economic and other development. Anyway, Teresa, thanks so much for talking to us today. I was Teresa Rayford.
Thank you, Bill.
This is a public service. Get time!